Welcome to the IC Disc Show, interviews with business owners, industry leaders, and tax experts, sharing how the IC Disc can benefit your bottom line profits. Check out the show notes at icdiscshow.com. This show is brought to you by the IC Disc Alliance. Discover how the premier IC Disc consulting firm supports you at icdisc.com. And by Your Podcast Team, where having your own podcast is as easy as being a guest on ours. Find out more at yourpodcast.team. Now, here's your host, Dave Spray.
Hi, my name is David Spray, and welcome to another episode of the IC Disc Show. Today, my guest is Dan Corridor, the owner of Strategic CFO. Strategic CFO is like many virtual CFO service companies, except that Strategic CFO has an interesting twist that they implemented a little over a year ago. They use what Dan calls nearshoring, similar to offshoring, but done in Mexico, where it is very near. And we go into great detail about how they've developed a model that allows for providing professional grade back office accounting for 60% less than a traditional US sourced solution. There's a lot of great ideas in here, whether you're looking at developing a professionalized accounting group or not. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I did. Good morning, Dan. Welcome to the podcast.
Good morning, David. Thanks for having me. It's my pleasure.
Yeah, my pleasure. So where are you calling in from today? What part of the world are you in?
So we are in Sugarland, Texas, which is a suburb of Houston.
Gotcha. So are you a native of Houston?
No, I was actually born in Bogota, Colombia in South America. Okay. But my family moved to the States when I was a baby, about 6 months old, grew up first 10 years in Ohio, moved to Houston area in 1976, and we've been here ever since.
Oh, wow. Did y'all speak Spanish at home then?
We did. That was my first language. My dad always said, speak Spanish at home, and I don't care what you speak outside the house. We learned English outside the house when I went to school, and we still speak Spanish today, and my kids do as well.
That's awesome. I'm so jealous. My heritage is German, and both of my grandmothers were born in the Dakotas in German communities. They only spoke German until they started school, but then they married non-German guys. And, you know, then it was during World War II where, you know, speaking German was kind of frowned upon. So we lost the language. So I'm always jealous of you truly bilingual folks, and bilingual with no accent in either language, because I'm assuming your Spanish is, you know, has a nice Colombian accent.
Right. It's pretty good as well. Yeah, it's certainly paid off. I really think that I've got the couple of jobs I've had in my career were because mostly I spoke Spanish and could be in Latin America.
That's awesome. And good for you for keeping it going to the next generation. I'm told that's easy to kind of let it slide.
It is, especially as kids grow up, you know, get a little bit older and they start talking back in English and we have to kind of remind them. But it works. You know, my kids are now 20 and 21 and they both are fluent in Spanish and English.
That's awesome. What a great skill set to launch them into the world with.
Yeah. We're proud of them.
That's great. So you end up in Houston at some point, at least when you went to college?
Yes. I went to University of Houston, got an accounting degree there. And I started working in Houston in oil and gas production first and then oil and gas services. So, yeah, it's always been in Houston except for 2 years in Dallas and then almost about 4 years as an expat in Mexico. So other than that, always based in Houston.
Okay. Yeah, I tell people you go through, it's like the stages of grief. I tell people that, like, it's the stages of Houston, right? Like when you first get here, at least this is what I went through, you hate it. There's like, it seems like an ugly city. It's flat, you know, the traffic, the humidity in the summertime. And then after a while, you start to tolerate it. And then at some point, it kind of gets in your blood. And if you ever move away, you're like, wow, I really miss that place. That place has got a lot going for it.
Yeah, I've always enjoyed it. You know, I've always liked the Houston area. I love Texas. Houston has been great. I love the climate, except for these January, February days where, you know, we might end up in 42 degrees. I don't like that, but I don't mind. It has grown a lot. The last few years has experienced a tremendous amount of growth.
Especially out where you are, Sugarland.
Yeah.
I remember when Sugarland was the middle of nowhere, the country.
It was nothing. It was nothing. I remember going to school, elementary school. We'd go to private school, St. Thomas and Warren, and I'd tell kids where I live, and they thought I was crazy. You live where? You know, but it was only a 30-minute drive back then. So
what? I know. Well, let's talk about strategic. When did you become involved in strategic CFO? When did you acquire it?
So I acquired the business in October 2017. The business has been around since the mid-90s. The founder, Jim Wilkinson, was a colleague of mine, and I actually met him in the 90s. And it was ironic. I met him because my brother-in-law and his family hired Jim Wilkinson back in 96 or 97 to help him on a project as a CFO. And my brother-in-law said, hey, you got to meet this guy. He's a really nice guy. He's, you know, in Houston, he's in your area. So I met him back then. And, you know, Jim and I had similar backgrounds in regards to the type of things we worked on, our personalities. So we would do lunch and breakfast, you know, quarterly or every 6 months over the years. Never worked with each other or for each other, but we networked a lot and would run into each other. We stayed in touch. We even referred business back and forth to each other. So that, you know, Jim is the founder and started this business, started the brand, did a great name, developing the brand, the strategic CFO. And he started our online business where we sell a membership subscription and some coaching workshops. Jim was very much a strategic coach. He loved the academic side of accounting and operations. He was very involved with the entrepreneurship program at the University of Houston. So all that really strengthened the business. And unfortunately, Jim went to bed one day in 2017 in the summer and didn't wake up.
I remember.
Passed away. So it was really sad. I unfortunately didn't hear about his passing for 2 or 3 months afterwards, and I was not able to attend his funeral. But I heard it was a beautiful funeral with, you know, 1,000 people. So that was Jim. You know, he was a networker, he had lots of friends. And, yeah. You know, so when he passed, I was at a company called Opportune, and I was in a restructuring group, and I was fine at Opportune, love that firm. They've done a great job over there. But when Jim passed, you know, I thought to myself, you know, I've always been, you know, kind of an entrepreneur myself. I've always had the back of my mind wanting to do something on my own. So when Jim passed, I approached the family and I asked them, what are they going to do with the firm? And they really didn't have a plan of action. So they put me in touch with their attorney, and make a long story short, I acquired the firm in October 2017. And it's been great ever since. This is a year six. I can't believe we've already been here 6 years. And we've had a great firm, great growth. We've got really good people. The brand continues to build in strength. And it's a well-known brand. And I meet a lot of people that knew Jim, you know, and they go, oh, yeah, I knew Jim, you know, and congrats for taking over Jim's business, you know. So to me, it's a privilege to take on his legacy.
Yeah. No, I really like Jim. I think the last time I had dinner with him, he had a restaurant. I forget where it was in West U that he liked to go to. And we'd had dinner or drinks probably after work one day. But that was about a year before his passing. And also like you, but no, I think I did hear about it, but I was out of town. I was out of state and was not able to make the funeral, but same thing I heard.
Yeah.
It was well attended. Well, I'm glad that you reached out to the family, because I'm sure his wife was, you know, likely in shock from the whole thing. And
yeah.
So that probably worked out well that there was somebody that, you know, she knew him, you know, had a
right
relationship with. So that's great. So talk to me about who are the companies that you all are best set up to serve? What's really your sweet spot and who you really can add value to?
Right. So, you know, people ask us, what are the typical companies you work on? And boy, it's a wide range. Our clients, you know, our smallest client is probably $7 million in revenue. And our largest client is literally a $13 billion publicly traded company. So okay. It's a wide range. Now, what's right down kind of the middle of the fairway? It's that typical entrepreneur or family-owned business that started small and grew and is now doing $40, $50, $80 million in revenue. And they need to professionalize the back office. It's the companies that started with very basic financial statements and cash reporting and things like that, and have bookkeepers and then they move on. And now their bank or their partners or investors, somebody or the business owner needs professional financial statements. So we professionalize the back office. We professionalize your financial statements. I always explain to business. I have this same discussion almost every single day with business owners. There's a difference between bookkeeping and accounting. And everybody knows bookkeeping. Everybody does bookkeeping. But bookkeeping is entering transactions into a system. You enter a PAR, you push a button, generate a report, that's bookkeeping. We don't do bookkeeping. We don't do that clerical administrative entering transactions. We will do it as support staff, but we do accounting. We apply accounting principles based on US GAAP to those transactions. Mm-hmm. And it starts with everything on the P&L and everything on the balance sheet. You can go to line by line, and there are some accounting principles that apply to each one of those transactions.
Right.
Perfect example. Yesterday, I was at a client meeting. It's been a fairly new client, and they have a lot of manual processes and the transactions on the bookkeeping side. And we said, hey, we can automate this. And then all you're going to need is the controller and the accounting manager. And his response is, wait a minute. But if you automate all this transactions, I don't need anybody. And I was like, well, you're automating the bookkeeping. You're not automating the accounting. Somebody has to apply the knowledge of accounting principles to all those transactions to make sure you have the right P&L and the right balance sheet. But if you just do the bookkeeping, then all you have in whatever accounting system you're using is transactions in a system that are really meaningless because you don't have the right margins, you don't have the right assets, you don't have the right liabilities because you're not applying accounting principles. So oftentimes, we find ourselves as a firm educating and coaching the business owners on what is accounting? Why do they need financial statements based on US GAAP? It's not just for the publicly traded companies that are trading on the Dow Jones. Mm-hmm. It's not for those billion-dollar companies. Every business, if you don't have the proper financial statements, we call them financial tools because it's more than just financial statements. If you don't have good financial tools, how do you make decisions in your business? How do you know what projects are making money and not making money? Truly, right, based on accounting principles, not on a cash basis. So we have to often educate those. So our ideal company is one is the entrepreneur or business owner that wants to listen, because we have some that they don't know what they don't know. And they think we're just, I had one business owner not too long ago, probably 4 months ago, tell me that these financial tools and financial statements are just purple unicorns. I was like, okay. So if somebody doesn't want to accept the fact that I've been doing this for 32 years and we know what financial statements are and how they improve your business. If that business owner thinks that they know more than we do, we can't help them. If they don't want to be coached, if they don't want to listen, we can't. And we've run into those. We've run into business owners that they think they know everything. They've run their business 20, 30 years, which they run very well. They have good widgets that they make, but they don't know anything about financial statements or accounting principles. So that's the ideal client, one that's coachable, one that allows us to bring process and procedures and US GAAP so that they can have not only good financial statements, which are all historical in nature, but also what do we do with that data? Now we have to interpret that historical information, forecast it, analyze it, look at margins so that the business owner can make better decisions about the future. And that's hence our name, Strategic CFO. We will always want to think strategically. What do we do with that data to interpret it so that we can properly forecast and know where the business is going and keep it financially healthy? The balance sheet and the P&L are going to describe to you the health of the business. Mm-hmm. And we want to make sure it stays healthy. So that's the ideal client.
So it sounds like, it sounds like really it's companies who are kind of a victim of their own success. You know, companies who have, a $5 million company who stays static for 20 years, probably can't add as much value. But that $5 million company that quadruples in revenue over 5 to 10 years, where they outgrow their accounting system, their processes, the team, it sounds like that's where the opportunity starts with you all.
That's right. That's right. Where they want to grow, they want to professionalize the back office, have professional financial statements. Now, there's a lot of companies that do what we do. And since I bought the firm, I've always thought, how can we differentiate ourselves? How can we really stand out and bring something to the table? So initially, the first 5 years of owning the business, I thought that, we're, and it's true, we are very different because we do have a tremendous amount of operational experience. Myself speaking, I've been CEO of companies with as many as 2,000 people. I've been general manager of business. When I was an expat in Mexico, I was general manager for that business after first being the CFO. So we've got tremendous operational experience. I've been interim CEO for one of our clients as strategic CFO. We have that operation, and operations and accounting always have to talk to each other hand in hand.
Sure.
But about a year and 1 month ago, year and 2 months ago, we really came up with a differentiating factor So we, you know, I've always been against outsourced accounting, and I've been asked previously if we do outsourced accounting. I've always said no, and I don't want to do it, because the companies that exist today that do the traditional outsourced accounting, I have two main problems with them. Number one is that they are very far removed from the operation. They are located somewhere else. They never set foot in a business. So there's not that connection with operations. Sure. Number two is that those companies that do outsourced accounting, they're working on 10 other clients at the same time. So the business doesn't really get the biggest bang for their buck. And that always bugged me as being an operating guy. So out of a need, one of our clients who came to us said, Dan, we love y'all. We love these two people you have here. They're doing a great job. They finally got us professional accounting, financial statements, and these tools, and we budget and forecasting, all this stuff. But we can't afford you because we're charging US rates. Sure. And we have to charge US rates. We have to pay our people good wages, fair wages. We have to have a little margin in it. We're not going to become millionaires out of this, but we have to have a margin. So I told the owner, I said, you know what? You're right. You can't afford us. You're too small. And they were a $7 million business. So I went to the drawing board and came back a couple months later. And we have developed now a product called Near Sourcing. Near Sourcing is outsourced accounting improved and on steroids. We took those two things that I don't like, which is far removed from the operation and working on multiple clients at once. So what we've done with Near Sourcing, we will hire an accounting team, and it could be a team of two, kind of the typical model. It could be one, it could be 10. We actually have one that's 20, but the typical model is a controller and accounting manager. We hire them. They're dedicated to your business, and they are on live every day. They only work for you. They are on Teams. You go to the group and Teams and join a meeting. You're talking to your accounting team. It's like having them down the hall, Monday through Friday. So that eliminates that. They only work for you. They're not working for anybody else. Number two, the onboarding of that team and quarterly visits are on site. So the business owner, the operating team, the clerical staff, they get to know the accounting team because the onboarding is there. And on a quarterly basis, they fly in and they sit there and they do a quarterly review with you. And they're usually there 3 to 5 days with you at the office, working with you hand in hand. So now you start developing that relationship. Now you have a connection between the accounting team and the operations and this dedicated team. And we're able to offer that at a 60% savings. That's 60.
Wow, that's huge.
Because the team happens to be located in Mexico. Now, why Mexico? Okay. Mexico, I spent 4 years in expat there. I got to work with all the big four firms, got to establish a good network over there. In Latin America and Mexico and Colombia and other places, there are very strong professionals. And let's just talk about accounting, the accounting professionals. The accounting professionals that we hire usually have big four experience. They work for U.S. companies. They're all bilingual. They speak very good English. They all know U.S. GAAP. And they just happen to work remotely for that period of time between their visits. And the wages and economy in Mexico is much different than U.S. A controller in the U.S. will easily, a qualified controller, let me start with that because I've seen people labeled controllers that aren't. A qualified controller is a $150,000 person in the U.S. An accounting manager is going to be an $85,000, $90,000 person in the U.S. You're spending with benefits and 401k and taxes and everything else, you're going to spend over $300,000, $350,000 on just two people for a small $10 million business. That's a big pill to swallow.
Sure.
And we realize that. So we've brought that cost down. So for $12,500 a month, which is less than half of what you'd pay here, you get a team of two qualified professionals dedicated to your business that are providing this professional accounting.
Wow.
We started this out of a need with one company. We're up to 10. And I have got a contact at a very large publicly traded company. And I was telling her about this over dinner. she came back to me a couple of days later and she goes, you know, nearshoring thing you told me about, can you scale that up? I said, absolutely. Make long story short, we've opened up an office in Monterrey, Mexico, only for this publicly traded company of $13 billion.
Oh,
and
wow.
We now have, oh, I think we're at 22 accountants. And that's probably going to go to 30 or 40 accountants. Because again, any business will benefit from reducing costs. So this large publicly traded company is shifting some accounting rules, and it could be AP, accounts payable, accounts receivable, fixed assets, intercompany, cash applications, whatever the needs are, we're able to provide that at a huge savings. Mm-hmm. So with that, we've developed nearshoring. It's a successful model. It applies to any business anywhere in the U.S., but we're able to finally bring professional accounting. The work's done remotely, but it's on-site visits every 3 months for 60% savings. So that's a new differentiating factor for our firm at Strategic CFO. And we think that's going to really take off. It has taken off. We think it's going to be a game changer for us and our future as a business. We'll continue to do everything we're doing. We're not leaving that, but we're just adding to our revenue stream.
I really appreciate the innovation of that. And it also just seems like, you know, the college students just are not enamored with, you know, entering the accounting profession, right? There just seems to be staffing shortages. And whereas it seems like these countries outside the U.S., there's a greater enthusiasm to do the work.
Yep. There's a large pool. There's a large pool there. You're right. I heard numbers as high as 30% less enrollment in accounting in colleges over the last couple of years than historical. So there are less people entering the accounting profession. A lot of them have retired. A lot of people have simply left the accounting profession. It can be grueling. You know, it could be long days and long month ends and long quarters, long year ends. So people have found other ways to make a living. And that means it's supply and demand. That means the ones that stay in place that are controllers and accounting managers, the wages, they're demanding higher wages because there's less of them and there's high turnover. That's the other thing is that companies, if they hire us and our near sourcing team, if there's turnover, that's our problem. It's not the company's problem. We will fill in a position if somebody leaves the near sourcing team. And we have such a large stack of resumes that we're able to do this quickly. So now we've got over 30, 35 accounts in Mexico working for us. And we hope to double that number in 2024. So we are going to have a very large pool. We have a formal legal entity. We've got bank account in Mexico. We've got an entity in Mexico, got payroll in Mexico. We're paying our taxes in Mexico. So it's all legit. It's all, you know, meeting all the guidelines and the labor requirements that we do in Mexico. But even with all that, we're able to save U.S. businesses a tremendous amount of money.
That's awesome. And I was just reading about a new Department of Labor ruling, you know, make it even more difficult for companies to have contractors, right? I mean, there's always this desire by the federal government to have as few people classified as contractors as possible. And it seems like your model avoids those issues as well, right? Because these aren't even, you know, U.S. contractors.
Right.
Is that right?
That's right. That's correct. But yeah, they're all our employees, but they're through a Mexican entity that we have down in Mexico. I failed to mention each team is supervised by one of the controllers we have here in Texas. That controller is available if the client says, hey, I need to see somebody tomorrow. You know, all right, fine. Controller, myself, get in the car and go see the client. And at month end, we have quality control. The controller here in Houston reviews the month end reports, meets with the team several times during the week. So the controller usually supervises three or four teams. And that's okay. How we're splitting it up. So the controller is busy full time. We'll continue to hire local controllers in Houston because we need more supervisors and are supervising these accounting teams in Mexico. So we do have local support. And being the strategic CFO, our specialty is CFOs. So we actually bring that to the table also. So a company, by signing up with us for the nearshoring, yes, they get the team, but they also get the support of our firm at the CFO level. So I've attended many bank meetings, many business owner meetings, you know, strategic meetings with business owners because they are our clients. and we're able to provide that CFO support by them joining our near-sourcing model.
I really love that. And I, our clients tend to be similar to yours, except all of our clients are privately held, median annual revenues, probably $60 or $75 million. And so here's a question. So there's obviously a cost to professionalizing the back office accounting function. What are some of the financial benefits to having more? So as I'd mentioned, there's a cost to professionalizing your back office, right? But I'm sure there's also financial benefit. What are some of the financial benefits that you've seen from companies who do upgrade their accounting function, the quality of their financial statement? I mean, I can imagine some benefits, but what are some of the benefits you've seen?
No, great question. And obviously, oftentimes a new business owner that I meet will ask me the same question. So what my response is, if you do not do this, if you do not spend money on professional accounting, we call US GAAP accounting, whatever books and records you're keeping are wrong, period. They're wrong.
Right.
The most common example is cash basis accounting. If you manufacture widgets or you install something and or you have contracts and you do not have the professional US GAAP accounting, you do not have a true picture of your margins, period, because it's cash basis. The world we live in is a world of accrual accounting. And I don't want to get into accounting and accruals and all that, but it's a timing difference. Yeah. The easiest example is an invoice and account receivable. That is, in essence, the most basic example of an accrual. We have a timing difference. That's the economy we live in. Unless you sell, the company that does not need professional accounting, like we provide, is the guy who has a hamburger stand and sells burgers for cash and receives every day.
Right.
Okay. For example, a little bit bigger than the hamburger stand or hot dog stand, we really can't help, for example, a fast food business that's point of sale. They sell a burger and fries and they collect at the franchisee level, at that small business level, they're not going to benefit from US GAAP accounting. Now, the company that owns them and has multiple franchises will, because they've got accruals. They've got vendors and they've got this and they've got that and they buy machines. And so the cash basis transaction, in the most simplest explanation, if I sell you something for cash and I don't have any inventory and I don't have any receivables or any payables or anything else, and I don't buy equipment, they don't need us. But that's a tiny business. So that's what the US government calls a micro business. But the companies we deal with are not micro businesses. The company we deal with have employees. They've got insurance, they buy equipment, they have inventory, or they have complicated services, or they have contracts that go over 30 days. So there's some nuance. And by not having professional accounting, you don't have good financial statements. So if you don't have a good income statement, how do you know your margins? How do you know what you really have? How do you know if you're losing money? So by having them, not only do you have good reporting tools, but we've also increased your enterprise value. I've had several investment bankers tell me over the years that the difference between having the professional accounting versus not is at least a multiple of one of enterprise value.
That's huge.
So if you've got a business that does $1 million of EBITDA, that's a multiple of one. We just added $1 million of value by bringing professional accounting to your business. So not only does it help you in the short term, which is running the business, because now you understand your margins and you're able to forecast and plan your cash flow and determine if you're going to reinvest in your business, but we're also adding value on a long-term basis, enterprise value. Those are the benefits. And we're never going to cost you that added value that we bring to the table. We're not going to cost you $1 million a year, but we're adding that value.
And what
most
about
business owners will listen?
Yeah. No, and I can also imagine that, let's say, their bank starts requiring reviews or audits. I'm guessing that the audit fees by the accounting firm are probably going to be less if you're providing them, professional financial statements, that are GAAP basis already.
That's right. So first of all, I would recommend that everybody go through an audit because it's just good to have. But if you're required to have an audit, Yes, an audit firm, which we do not do audits. We're not a CPA firm, but an audit firm will come in and do an audit. First of all, they cannot complete an audit if you don't have professional accounting.
Right.
So what the audit firm is going to tell you is you need to hire somebody, get your books and records per US GAAP so we can audit you. Otherwise, we're going to audit you and you're going to have a qualified opinion because you don't meet any of the accounting principles. And the audit firm cannot do that service for you because they get conflicted out.
Yeah.
They
yeah,
can't like audit their own work.
30 years ago, where I think they had more latitude.
Yes. Yeah. Before my prior employer, Enron, before Enron in 2000, you know, the Sarbanes-Oxley was formed. A lot of accounting principles were changed. At that time, I think it was at that time that it was required that if you know, you have to split your services, if you're going to be auditing, you can't be consulting and you can't be auditing your own work. So, and we've been hired by companies that are going through an audit, and audit firms have contacted us and said, hey, I have a client. Here's what they need help on to get their books and records to the professional level. And we are hired by the client. The audit firm comes in later after we're done and they can complete their audit. And we are able to save them some money by doing that.
That makes sense. What do you enjoy most about your role with the company?
I love dealing with businesses that trust us. And I've got, and most of our clients do, 95% of our clients do, or 99%. We may have one or two that don't believe yet because we're still new. But I love getting involved with a business owner or business owners that trust us and they allow us to deliver over time because it takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. You know, it'll take 3 or 4 months to develop a relationship. It'll develop, you know, 6 or 8 months to finally get things really where there's a, they're seeing the deliverables. But I love seeing the transformation. And, you know, we've got many examples in our firm of a transformation where a company started with no financial reporting that was accurate to really good financial reporting and cash flow forecasts and budgeting and financial models where we interpret that data and everything's working. So watching that transformation is very rewarding. That's what I love the most. And I love dealing with business owners on the operating side where we can add value as well.
Sure. Yeah, no, I can certainly relate to that. Well, I can't believe how fast this time has flown by. I have just a couple kind of fun questions for you. Are you ready for some outside the box questions?
Bring it on. I love them.
Awesome. So let's say you could go back in time and give advice to your 25-year-old self. What advice might you give to your 25-year-old self with the benefit of, you know, the last few decades?
If I were to go back to my 25-year-old self, I'd say start saving money early. And that's what I tell my children. We had that discussion over Christmas.
Okay.
In your early 20s, unless you're really smart and talented, and I wasn't, you don't understand the time value of money and compounding interest.
Yeah.
Like you do now.
Sure.
And I literally told my kids over Christmas, we had this exact same discussion. I said, you know, take 25% of your paycheck and put it away in some account that you're never going to touch.
Yeah.
Don't even think about it.
Yeah.
And by the time you're 50 or 60, you're going to see a huge nest egg and it's going to feel very rewarding. That's something I would do different. I got married late, you know, I was 34. So I worked hard in my 20s. I was already working for very large companies in nice positions, controller roles by the time I was 30, controller roles. So I was busy and making good money, but also spending money, you know, I was really focused on getting the nice car,
sure.
You know, traveling and, you know, not so focused on planning ahead and planning a family. Then I stumbled onto my beautiful wife and said, oh my God, I got to get married, you know, and then, you know, soon after kids and then, you know, the house. And then, but so anyway, that's the long response. I would say early, mid 25, start saving early.
Okay. Yeah. I read a study once that said, and it was a crazy number, like if you saved a certain, you know, amount of money, you know, call it $10,000 a year from the time you were 22 until you were 30, and then you stopped saving, you never saved again, you'd have more money like when you were 65 or 7 than if you started saving at like 40 and you saved that $10,000 a year for 25 years. Like you'd end up with less money than saving for 8 years early on, which just demonstrates that whole time value of money. I think Einstein said that compound interest was the most amazing invention in the history of the world, or some crazy thing.
It's crazy that the effect on that dollar saved early on is huge, you know.
Sure.
And I think I would do that different.
Okay. Well, here's the last question. I guess I have one and a half questions. I have the last fun one, and then the last one will just be if there's anything we didn't cover that we should have. But the fun one is barbecue or Tex-Mex?
Barbecue.
Okay. That's usually the most common answer. I stole that question. We helped Chris Hanslick, the managing partner in Boyer Miller. We were able to help them launch a podcast. And that's one of his standard questions that I've copied. I find it to be a fun question.
It's a tough one. I almost said Tex-Mex. It's a tough one.
Or I guess I should have asked you barbecue, Tex-Mex, or authentic Colombian food.
Yeah, I'd still go with barbecue or Tex-Mex. Colombian food's okay. You know, I find it to be a little bit blander, but it's okay.
That's good.
I'm going to knock it. My Colombian friends will hate me, but I don't know. It's good.
Well, is there anything that I didn't ask you that you wish I had?
Well, maybe, you know, one other comment that I'd like to add about our firm, which is a little bit differentiated factor. We have a lot of good international experience, not just myself, but my managing director, Oscar Pinotti, Cindy Din. They both have tremendous audit and international experience. Oscar also, interesting, if we haven't made it, let me tell you Oscar's story. We actually met in a small town in Argentina 24 years ago, we were both at Weatherford. I hired him when I was at Weatherford as controller for Latin America, and he was an accountant that I hired. He ended up staying at Weatherford for 20 plus years, did very well, grew throughout the ladder at Weatherford. And he left Weatherford a couple years ago and joined our firm. But we've got tremendous international experience, tremendous operational experience that could also add value to companies. So.
Okay. Well, that is great to know. Well, Dan, and then if people want to learn more about the services, what's the best place to learn more?
Best place to go to is our webpage, strategiccfo.com. There's two C's in the middle there, strategiccfo.com. Or just call my cell phone. You know, I don't mind people call my cell phone, 713-501-7481. But we're still small enough that we touch every client. I do. I like meeting all our clients and spending time with them. We're very involved with all of them. Myself and our managing directors are available to any one of our clients at any time. So, yeah, we'd love to continue Jim's legacy and continue to build this firm.
That's awesome. Well, Dan, thank you again for spending time with me today. I know the listeners are really
thank you, learn David.
More, and especially this near sourcing model. I think that's really intriguing. And I hope you have a great day.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time and thanks for having me.
All right.
There we have it, another great episode. Thanks for listening in. If you want to continue the conversation, go to icdiscshow.com. That's icdiscshow.com. And we have additional information on the podcast, archived episodes, as well as a button to be a guest. So if you'd like to be a guest, go select that and fill out the information, and we'd love to have you on the show. So that's it. We'll be back next time with another episode of the IC Disc Show.